So good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on the part of the world that you're calling in from. My name is Amit Dungrani, and I'm your host for our weekly Global Awaken call today. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls are to share and tell stories, and these stories are to help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while also fostering our own inner transformation. Today, our special guest speaker is the wonderful Peer Pradervant. In a few minutes, I'm going to turn things over to our moderator, who will briefly share some of her own thoughts, introduce our guest today, Peer, more formally, and then engage in a deep dialogue with him. And then at the top of the hour, we're going to roll into a Q&A and circle of sharing where we're going to invite all of you callers to reflect or send in your questions. And so really, just to jump right into things, our theme this week is the gentle art of blessing. And our guest, Peer, is going to share quite a bit about the power of blessing others and how it can transform yourself and how that positive inner impact can also ripple outwards, whether it's into your personal relationships or even the community at large. And so before Peer shares some of his insights, I was hoping maybe you, Pavi, could share some of your own thoughts and reflections on the matter to really help set the foundation for today's call.
Sure. Thanks so much, Amit, for those beautiful reflections to seed into the conversation. And I will go right into a brief introduction of Peer, and then we will get to hear his voice. Peer Pradervant is a skilled author, speaker, and facilitator with a long background in international development, whose life work now centers around this revolutionary and secular practice of blessing the world that we live in and all that it's in it. When a series of intense personal experiences gave him firsthand experience of this power, it changed the course of his life. He went on to write The Gentle Art of Blessing, a passage and then a book that flowed spontaneously out of him and then into the world, where it continues to change and charge thousands of lives today for the better. I can't think of any way, better way of introducing this remarkable person than by quoting a few excerpts from that passage on the art of blessing. On awakening, bless this day, for it is already full of unseen good, which your blessings will call forth. For to bless is to acknowledge the unlimited good that is embedded in the very texture of the universe and awaiting each and all. On passing people in the street, on the bus, in places of work and play, bless them. The peace of your blessing will accompany them on their way, and the aura of its gentle fragrance will be a light to their path. To bless means to wish unconditionally, total, unrestricted good for others and events from the deepest wellspring in the innermost chamber of your heart. It means to hallow, to hold in reverence, to behold with utter awe that which is always a gift from the Creator. He who is hallowed by your blessing is set aside, consecrated, holy, and whole. To bless is yet to invoke divine care upon, to think or speak gratefully for, to confer happiness upon, although we ourselves are never the bestower, but simply the joyful witnesses of life's abundance. We have the privilege of having the author of these deeply profound words on our call with us today. He's calling in from his home in Switzerland. Peer, welcome, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tazi, for that very friendly introduction.
You're welcome. You're welcome. With a topic like this, I think the friendliness just comes automatically. You know, I think we're all feeling pretty friendly, everyone listening to this call as well. Impossible not to with these kinds of reflections. Peer, before we jump into the series of events that, you know, created or catalyzed the gentle art of blessing in your own life, I was wondering if you could look back and remember your earliest recollection of either receiving a blessing or feeling that blessing pour out of you.
Well, I guess the sense of receiving blessings starting in childhood, I had very loving grandparents. I grew up in England during the war, and my grandmother especially was a very special person who gave me a great sense of love and compassion for others. And then during adolescence, I'd say moments of spiritual insight that just popped up from time to time. I remember that close to our home, there was a large field with a huge oak right in the center of the field. And I often used to go there and sit at the foot of the oak. And I had some lovely moments there. And early in my life, when I finished what we call college in Switzerland, which is sort of the first 2 years of college in the States, I went to work in the slums of Marseille. And it was a very challenging and exciting year. And on the way back, I stopped in a place called Taizé, which was a, today it's well known in the Christian world. It was the first Protestant monastery for brothers. And I had a very, very powerful mystical experience, which lasted a whole night long on the power of love. So, and there have been so many blessings through my whole life that I could not even start recounting them.
And that's beautiful. And did you have a very deep exposure, I guess, to any particular spiritual path or religious path that, that influenced your trajectory?
Well, I'd say I grew up in a Christian family where there was a strong grounding in the Bible, and I still find the Bible helpful, especially the message of the Sermon on the Mount of Jesus and Psalm 23, which is for me a mainstay, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want," which is for me one of the most beautiful, non-denominational, universal spiritual texts that I've ever come across in my lifetime. And then I was for many years on a very strong non-dual path of a non-dual teaching of Christian origin, but I left that because the movement was very sort of rigid in its organization, and now I'm not on a, I don't belong to any religion or spiritual movement, but I am very much a student of the spiritual path, and especially in Geneva, I've created a blessing circle. They exist in a few cities in Europe. And this is a group where we meet every 2 weeks to just bless different people and world situations. And there is such a love in this group. It is, I just so look forward to going it every 2 weeks because it just overflows with love. And that for me is the essence of any authentic spiritual path.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I'm thinking back and trying to envision, you know, this childhood and your young adulthood, the oak trees and the influence of these spiritual teachings and the Bible. And when it came time to choose your career path, what direction did you go in?
Well, my father was a minister, and I did 2 years of theology solely to please him. And after 2 years, I really realized it. This was not my cup of tea, and I embarked in the field of sociology, and I really enjoyed my studies. They were great enjoyment, especially my 2 years at the University of Michigan, which I spent from 69 to 71, which I always say are among the two best years in my whole lifetime, because the campuses at that time were on fire with so many exciting movements, experiences, and teachings.
So what drew you to sociology?
Well, it was simply, I guess it was a very undefined topic that you could open up in all sorts of different directions. And very rapidly I went to Algeria, and a year after eating, I worked first in Geneva at the UN for 1 year, and the UN offered me, at that time they did it, a life contract, a contract for my whole life, with a salary twice the Geneva average salary, with 2 months vacation, special shops for UN personnel, and no taxes. I mean, this was anyone's dream. And of course, everybody pushed me to accept this. And I said, no, I saw that I'd become a good little bourgeois with a nice little wife, a nice little house, two nice little children, and a car. And I would fall asleep at the beginning of my life. And that's not what I came on this planet for. And I went to Algeria without any contract, just because it is a country that had undergone a real revolution. They chased the French from the country, and after a long, long fight for independence, they changed all the structures in the country. And then from then on, I embarked in... I was living in Africa, where the birth rate was extremely high, and embarked in the field of family planning. And I, by the way, worked for an extraordinary, wonderful U.S. NGO, the American Friends Service Committee. This is a Quaker NGO which works all around the world. And it was the most exciting professional experience of my whole lifetime, because these people were so respectful of other cultures, other needs, and in such a spirit of listening, which is the center of Quakerism. And then I went on to other fields, and now for almost 25 years, I've been running my own workshops on personal development and writing.
Wonderful. I didn't realize that there was a Quaker influence as well. And I'm sure there's so much. How long were you in Africa?
I was 11 years in Africa.
11 years, and that was different parts of Africa working on international development?
In Algeria, I was working for the Algerian government as a sociologist. Mm-hmm. And then I say I became a defrocked sociologist in Algeria, because what I'd learned at the university didn't work at all in the field. And then I went to the University of Michigan, and then I had these 2 years, extraordinary years, with the American Friends Service Committee in Senegal. And I was traveling all over French-speaking Africa. And 2 years later, I had another extremely exciting professional experience, starting a grassroots educational magazine for the grassroots. And I had no experience of journalism whatsoever. And I took, as a chief editor, a wonderful African woman who had no experience of journalism whatsoever. And in 3 years, it was the best-selling international magazine in the whole of French-speaking Africa. And we were really able to... We were the first magazine in the whole of Africa, for instance, ever to speak of women's circumcision, which was a very hot potato at the time and still is.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. These are all such thorny, important, and vast issues and problems. And I find it really interesting that so much of the groundwork of your life was focused on these areas of making very tangible external change in the world, and how that shifted then later into working from a more internal space through the art of blessing.
Exactly. I think all is consciousness, absolutely. And the most important thing on the whole planet today is raising world consciousness. That is the thing that is going to transform the planet very, very deeply. All is consciousness. Everything starts with a new awareness.
And this is a great place maybe for you to tell us the story of how you made that transition from this world where you were dealing with these very real, very pressing kind of, you know, whether it was hunger or, malnutrition or infant mortality, dealing with these issues, and then what led to the transition out of that world?
Okay, lovely. Thank you for the question. I was working in Switzerland after I returned from Africa in the early 80s, I was working in this French-Swiss school system for a group of NGOs on a program of education on North-South issues. And it was I set up a whole new program for French-speaking Switzerland. It was very exciting. And I so loved my job that I had a camp bed in my office. And when I missed the last train to go home, I would often sleep in the office. Mm-hmm. And I decided to organize a roving exhibit on world hunger, because it was, and still is, one of the main social issues of the world. And there was no money in the budget. And I invested to start this roving exhibit for schools. And I invested of my own savings, the equivalent today of $25,000. And that had never happened in the history of these organizations, of course. And my employers were very, very satisfied. And the exposition was a great success. And the name of the exhibit, it was a roving exhibit for schools. It was called Ending Hunger Today. And at the same time, I joined something called the Hunger Project, which started in the United mm-hmm. States. It was a world campaign to end hunger. And the slogan of the campaign was the end of hunger by the year 2000, which would have been possible in the early 80s if there'd been a political will. And my employers, who were a bit leftist oriented, didn't like things that come from the States. And especially there was one man in these organizations who just hated my guts, and he decided he wanted to get rid of me. So he first they told me that they forbid me to speak of the Hunger Project in my work in the schools, and these are organizations which are fighting hunger in the third world, so it's rather contradictory. And I abided by their request, although with great sadness. Then one day I was called up to a meeting, and I was told point blank, either you stop saying that we can end hunger by the year 2000 in schools because the Hunger Project says it, not because it's right or wrong, or then you stop your work. And I was just flabbergasted, dumbfounded, hero organizations fighting hunger telling me to stop using a very powerful slogan. So evidently I quit my job. I didn't want to commit a moral harakiri. But I developed the most huge, incredible resentment. And it was eating me up night and day. Became what psychologists call an obsession. I couldn't stop thinking about this when I got up in the morning under the shower, brushing my teeth, doing the washing up, doing the shopping. It was constantly, and I was meditating, praying, reading spiritual texts. I knew I was harming myself, but it just wouldn't go. And then one day, reading the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus stated, "Bless those who curse you." Mm. Of course, it was so clear. Well, of course, that's a solution. And there and then, I started blessing them. In their health, in their joy, in their family life, in their finances, in every conceivable way. First, it was in the head to obey what I believe was a revealed command. Then it moved very quickly down to the heart, because blessing, and I insist on that, blessing is 100% heart energy. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, a few months later, I started blessing people in the street, the supermarket, the post office, wherever I was, and it became so joyful. I would travel the whole length of the trains. I took both directions to be sure to bless every single person on that train. And it was just such fun. And one day I was preparing a talk for an international youth meeting in Zurich on the theme Healing the World, when suddenly I received this text, one-page text, of which you read a few extracts at the beginning, The Gentle Art of Blessing. By the way, there is now a website on this theme, and all you around the world can find it at www.gentleartofblessing, in one word, gentleartofblessing.org.
And you will find, we'll be sure to point people there, yes.
You will find this text on the Gentle Art of Blessing in the form of a video by the webmaster Jane Young, and it is just so incredibly beautiful. Well over 200,000 people have seen it on YouTube, and it's a text that has been changing lives. I can't say anything else, for 25 years all around the world. So that's the story, Tazi.
Wonderful. And it's a beautiful, beautiful story. And I think all of us, you know, the situation that you went through is particular to your story, yet all of us have felt those moments of resentment, of anger, of something that seems like rock hard within us that just won't dissolve no matter how much we batter at it with our thoughts. And I think you shifted the plane entirely by moving it into the realm of blessing. And I wonder, how do you understand this process? How do you articulate, or can you, what actually is happening?
Well, for me, Tazi, blessing is wanting the real good of the other person from the deepest wellspring of the most hidden part of your heart, or the deepest part of your heart. It is really wanting the real good of the other person. And I do a lot of blessing in public, I mean, in the bus, in the street, on trains, and I just love it. And I just look at the person and send them a silent blessing. And the wonderful thing, for 25 years, it has been constantly changing and renewing itself. It's not something that is rigid. If it becomes rigid, then it's dead. It must flow from the heart. I have such a deep yearning for the happiness of every single person on this planet, including those called terrible dictators, that like President Assad of Syria and the like, the gentleman who runs North Korea, who just exploded an atom bomb, hydrogen bomb, and the like. Everyone, for me, is a child of divine love. Everyone merits our blessing. And so blessing is something that comes from deep compassion, that is done with deep compassion. And I've become so sensitive to people's suffering. I mean, I can see a person, just have a glint in their eyes from 20 feet away, and I feel instantaneously what their need is. If I see a state of depression, I bless them in their joy and their wholeness. If I feel anger, I bless them in their peace, in their serenity. And blessing is something that always comes back to you, because we are all one. More and more we are getting worldwide this sense of oneness, and that's the wonderful side of internet, which has become such a tool for linking people. You find the worst, but also such a lot of the best on the internet. And the whole world is getting such a stronger sense of this oneness, and a sense of the one infinite divine mind that is running this incredible show called the universe.
That's exquisite. I have a question around what the influence of this practice is. So I imagine it's almost like a muscle that you've been building so consistently over time. And how that, you know, you may not realize it in the moment of the simple practice, but how when something happens to you that's unexpected, say a situation that would have typically brought fear or aggressiveness, do you find yourself responding differently? And is there, do you have a story of any sort?
So many. I can think of when I discovered Gentle Art of Blessing, I was so excited. And I remember soon after discovering this, with an African friend who had an African American, an African Caribbean orchestra, we decided to organize a benefit concert for farmers, peasant farmers groups in Senegal. And so we organized this concert. We hired a large hall in a very large college in Geneva. And the technician of the college wanted to have nothing to do with our concert. And you know, these concert halls, you need true technicians. You can't run them nowadays yourself. And so I went to see the director of the college, and he said, "Look, Mr. Predivan, I'm so sorry, but this gentleman is a civil servant, and I can't get him to work after 5 o'clock in the evening if he doesn't want to." Those were the laws at the time. And he said, "Well, just hire somebody from another college," which we did. And this concert had been announced on the radio, in the press. And 2 hours before the concert, my friend and I came to see that everything was in order. And there were only two mics left on the scene. We went to see the technician of the college, who was so hostile. And we were opposite a counter from him, and he was talking to my friend with his great hostility. And first I felt anger. And then my little voice deep down said, "Pierre, you're not going to heal the situation by anger. Start blessing him." So I just started blessing him, silently blessing him in his gentleness, his kindness, his peace. And suddenly, between two sentences, a huge smile appeared on his face. He went to his laboratory, came back with a pile of mics, recommended the best ones, and wished us a wonderful evening. And for 25 years, I've had responses like this from people from all around the world. On the website, gentleartofblessing.org, you'll find a whole section on testimonies, and some from all around the world, including Death Row, Texas, where I have a friend who's been 25 years on death row for a crime he never committed, and he's become an amazing spiritual teacher for hundreds of people around the world. To this peasant leader in the heart of the Sahel, in one of the poorest regions of Africa, who's become, if I can say, totally addicted to blessing. He proposes as a solution to everybody. And one lovely little story he told me so many. Uh-huh. He meets this woman who's in a polygamous household, which is frequent in West Africa. She was in her 50s. And very often in households, when the first wife gets, you know, sort of elder and less sexy, the husband takes a much younger wife, who's more sprightly and exciting as a wife, as a sexual partner. And he'd taken a very young wife, a second wife, and he was making his first wife's life hell. He was insulting her, he was beating her, and the second wife, the younger one, started doing the same thing, and her life was sheer hell. And she just met my friend Mamadou in the street and poured out her tale of woe. And Mamadou said, "Look, Fatima, just bless your husband, bless your co-spouse, bless them in their kindness, in their serenity, in their goodness." And people in Africa who don't have a Western elite education are so receptive to new ideas. I've had that experience so often. And this woman just went home, and that very evening she started blessing her husband from the heart, blessing her co-spouse. The next morning, the husband came to her, apologized for his terrible behavior, and changed completely from one day to another. And of course, the young spouse followed suit. And again, if you go on the website, you'll find so many exciting stories of how blessing works, including one where it probably saved the life of an MD friend who was taken hostage by Tuareg rebels in Niger, and so on. It works. It works. But you don't do it because it works. You do it because it is a healing practice. For me, first of all, blessing is a deeply healing practice, at the same time, an extraordinary expression of gratitude. In the text on blessing, I say that blessing and gratitude are the two sides of the same coin. When you are expressing gratitude to someone for something they've done, you are blessing them. And you bless, when you bless somebody, it's because you feel gratitude towards the Creator for that person.
So powerful. As you're talking, I'm thinking how in our world we so come to value very different kind of skill sets, the skill set of intelligence, the skill set of being able to, you know, manipulate situations at an external level, and just, I don't know, we give so much attention, I think, to the energies and the abilities of the mind, and have somewhat brushed past this
neglected
powerful skill set of blessing that that works at maybe a subtler, quieter level, and so in our noisy world, it's hard to tune into, and yet it's. I love what you say about it's not, you don't do it for the external impact. You don't bless someone because it's going to change them. You do it because it's in that moment, it's healing you. And then the byproduct and the ripple effect of that does go outward, but that's not the original intention. That I think is a very a deep insight.
And also, blessing is so, so simple. There is, even in the all the blessings on the website, the testimonies of blessing, of the impact of blessing, the story of a 3-year-old child throwing his arms around his mother's legs because he's a tiny top.
Uh-huh.
And as she came out of the house towards him, he ran up to her and threw his arms round her legs and looked up at her with a shining face and said, "Mama, I bless you." Now, she had never, ever talked to her son about blessing. I find that just magical.
That's wonderful. And I think it, for many of us, it changes our fundamentally. I think we've been taught to understand that blessings come from the high to the low. It comes from the elders to the young. It comes from a place of privilege to, the underprivileged. And I think there's such an equalization in what you're talking about. There's a democratization of this. It's very, very beautiful to consider.
In English language, it's different from the French. In French, the word blessing, benediction, has a very liturgical and churchy dimension and resonance. Mm-hmm. And it turns people off. And I always have to explain that blessing in its true sense has nothing to do with the Christian church or churches, or it is probably in cultural terms of the nascent early cultural practices of humankind. Blessing is probably one of the oldest spiritual or religious practices of the human race. It has nothing to do with churches originally. It was adopted by the Christian church, and that's fine, and there's nothing wrong about that. But it is, I have an atheist friend who read my book, The Gentle Art of Blessing. I repeat, The Gentle Art of Blessing by Simon and Schuster, and who even shared it with friends, and she's an atheist. And any agnostic can practice blessing because it is simply wanting the real good of the other person. You don't have to have a whole theology to want good for another person, do you?
Absolutely not, yes. I was reading your blog and I was struck by one entry. that I think we tend to, we have a tendency to get siloed in our understanding of the world and then to think that, you know, our perspective is better or righter than the others. And I was struck by this little story that you told about being in Senegal and going to visit an imam friend.
Would you like me to repeat the story?
I would love you to share that story, yes.
It's one of my very favorite stories and one of the greatest lessons I ever learned. I was living in Senegal on the beach, on a little house, little bungalow on the beach, between two shanty towns. Now, you know what a shanty town is, where people live in absolute, utter, desperate poverty with shacks built out of wood. And the son of the imam who lived in one of the shanty towns was a dear friend of mine. And sometimes I used to go to the discuss with his father, who's a very kind, gentle man. And one day I thought, it was a Sunday, I'm going to ask Imam Sal how Islam defines God. Tazi, I was so cocksure that I had the best definition in the world. I belonged to a very specific healing movement at the time, which was based on a textbook. And there was a definition of God in that textbook, and we were taught that this was the ultimate revelation of truth. And so I thought, evidently, this is the ultimate definition of God. And there's a lovely Japanese proverb that says, it's very difficult to describe the vast horizons of the ocean to the frog sitting at the bottom of its well. And my state of mind, as I strolled along the beach to go to Imam Sa'd's home, was very much that of the little frog encased in his little well shaft. Then I arrive at Imam Sa'd's home, and he greets me with his great gentleness and kindness. He was such a gentleman. And we sit down after the usual greetings. I say, Imam Sa'd, I've come to ask you, how does Islam define God? And Tazi, the little frog in me, just had the surprise of its life. With his gentle voice, he said, Pierre, if you took all the branches of all the trees in the world as pens, and the water of all the oceans and lakes and rivers and streams as ink, you could not write out all the names, all the qualities of God. And of course, I was absolutely dumbstruck. And in the moment of silence that followed, he said, you know, Pierre, you are a better Muslim than most of the Muslims who surround me. By that, he meant that my lifestyle was, you know, I didn't drink alcohol. I didn't run after the very pretty young Senegalese girls, as most young Frenchmen working in Senegal at that time did. And I gave a considerable part of my income for humanitarian things to people. And Islam enjoins people who have the means to tithe their income. So he was very insincere. There's a little poem by Ed Markham, the American poet, which says, he drew a circle that closed me out, heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. Love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that closed him in. I had closed Imam Sal out of my heart, my consciousness, and he had enclosed me in his heart, his consciousness. And you can imagine, Tazi, what a wonderful lesson that was. And at a time where people are so often speaking of the, you know, Islamic terrorists and all that, I would like to stress that Islam has also a deep dimension of compassion.
Very important. And I love that image of the bigger circle that can always be drawn.
Yes.
Love, you know, that it is
all-embracing, all-encompassing, at a time when we feel shut out, when we feel marginalized,
exactly.
when we feel victimized, afraid, there's always the capacity to join hands with love and draw that that circle.
There's and blessing helps you do that, you see. It is impossible, and I mean impossible. I'm really categorical, but this time I am. It is impossible to judge and to bless at the same time. They exclude each other absolutely and totally. So if somebody has problems constantly judging others, well, you just start blessing. Dear friend, try blessing.
It is impossible to judge and bless at the same time. It's beautiful. So have there come times in your life when you felt challenged by this, where you've had things come up that you're like, oh, I'm not sure I can bless that? Or has it taken on this depth that allows you, the roots go so deep that you...
It can be very, very challenging. I remember, for instance, this friend on death row in Texas, whom I know is innocent, and we have a wonderful lawyer who has the same conviction, and all the international committee and all those who know him have this same deep conviction. And when George Bush was governor of Texas, he was a strong proponent of the death penalty, and his successor beat his record. But when he, at the time he was governor, he executed 152 people, which was a Texas record. And it took me 3 years of constant blessing to finally manage to bless him really sincerely. Mm. Now, it doesn't take so long. I mean, it's become so deep in me that I can usually bless without difficulty almost anyone. But that's after 27 years of practice, Tazi.
Beautiful. I think of, you know, we have these great examples, whether it's Nelson Mandela or Gandhi, who, you know, is assassinated, and
yes.
in an instance after the shot is fired, dies with a blessing on his lips,
yes.
a blessing and a prayer.
And exactly.
I think we look at that and we can, it's easy to say, oh, that person's on a different level, you know, that person is this, that, or the other, and I'm not there. But I think what we don't see is exactly what you're talking about. We don't see that moment rests on countless moments that came before of practicing in very ordinary, very small, very hidden and humble ways that allow for then that strength to spontaneously come up at that moment of great intensity.
A lovely story that I share on the website on blessing is of this school teacher who took part in one of my workshops, and she explained that she had a colleague. This was a relatively small school, primary school. I don't know. No, you don't say primary school in the States. You have another word. Grade school, I think.
Kindergarten or grade school, yes.
And she had a colleague, teacher colleague, in that school, who for 12 years, each time this colleague passed her, turned her head away from her. Now, can you imagine that, Tazi? Passing someone every single day for 12 years, and they never look at you. They turn their head away decisively. I mean, could drive anyone crazy. And she discovered blessing through one of my workshops, and she started blessing this woman. And before the next school vacations, the last day of school, this teacher came to her and with the most wonderful smile wished her fabulous vacation. And that's very simple. It's very,
yeah.
It's not an impressive story, but life is made mostly of small incidents, not huge, adventurous, and exciting experiences, but lots of little things. and blessing pours lots of honey on many situations. I love this. There's a greeting among the Moba in northern Togo. When you greet somebody, you say, well, how is your life today? And if their life is working well, the person replies, my heart is covered with honey. I just love that. Well, blessing.
Beautiful.
Blessing will cover your heart with honey and the heart of all those you bless.
I like that. My heart is covered with honey. We've got to start spreading more honey in the world.
And I'm a honey nut, in addition to that. The armories of our family, which go back to the 12th century, are a beehive, so you can imagine that.
Oh, my goodness. It really is in your lineage.
Or cardiac relation to honey.
Okay, I wanted to talk about how, you know, one of the phrases that our language is, it's built into our language where we talk about blessing, you know, trials as blessings in disguise.
Yes.
And it's easy to say, and yet in the moment it's hard to see. And when I listen to your story, you know, I can't help but thinking, wow, those guys who, you know, who laid down the law at that organization you were with and made this unreasonable demand.
Yes.
It was a blessing in disguise. I mean, it looked at the time like anything but you
at
know.
The time, mm-hmm. At the time, it was terrible. But, and the guy who organized this, one guy who organized this, who was, by the way, he started, this was a business meeting, and he opened the business meeting by saying, I'm an atheist, which is immediately set, you know, colors clear. And for, you know, it took me 3 years of constant blessing to heal myself of my resentment towards this man whom I took as my, you know, I considered him my enemy, my persecutor, whatever you want. And 10 years later, I met this guy in Lausanne, in a city near Geneva. And I had inside me one of the greatest explosions of joy in my existence. I gave him a huge hug, and we ate together. And for 3 days, my heart was singing, singing, singing. And it took me another 10 years, because as the British say, I'm a slow learner. It took me another 10 years to understand. And this is explained in my text on blessing. When something goes completely askew in your day, like when I had to leave this organization, my life went completely askew. When some unexpected event knocks down your plans and you too also burst into blessing, for life is teaching you a lesson, and the very event you believe to be unwanted, you yourself called for, so as to learn the lesson you might balk against were you not to bless it. Trials are blessings in disguise, and hosts of angels follow their path. Now, Tazi, I believe that at some level, before being born, I made a soul agreement with this man that set up this whole situation so that I could discover the power of blessing. And through that discovery, bless thousands of people all around the planet. Be a tool, a service tool for blessing. You know, Awaken Calls speaks about the servant role that you are to play. And so this gentleman was a tool for me to discover blessing, that it would in turn bless many others. So yes, trials are proofs of love's care. As the Apostle Paul says, all things work together to the good of them that love God. All things Not most, not 99%, 100%.
That's the teaching of a lifetime. I mean, I think that's something we can carry around in our pockets and benefit from everything from the driver who cuts you off to the big things when,
yes,
like your friend, you are in jail for a crime you didn't commit. I love how in the lines that you just quoted, you say when some unexpected event knocks down your plans and you too also burst into blessing. I love that, burst into blessing. It's almost this, you know, respond with the fullness of your heart, with this enthusiasm, with this, with all the things that we don't typically associate with being knocked down, you know, where the tendency would be to shrink in, to close down, to close off, and yet you're saying do the exact opposite.
You spoke about my death row inmate in Texas.
Yes.
A friend I've been corresponding with for 19 years, you know, who's innocent of the crime of which he has been accused. And he's used blessing so much on death row. And if there's any place on the planet which is the ultimate testing ground for blessing, it's death row, Texas, because death row, Texas is the end of hell. Could I read you a brief letter on blessing from Raja?
Oh, yes.
Because I think,
regardless
of who's writing it and where he's writing from, it carries great authority. He describes first a period of very tough conditions where the inmates were particularly poorly, terribly treated, with air conditioning so high they were freezing in their cells and poor food, etc. And then he says, I was really feeling the effects of it all. I was at the bottom of the barrel, asking God for the strength to hold on. I was ready to explode. I prayed, but for some reason I could not find comfort in my prayers, and I would get up feeling empty. Then you sent me your letter. I looked at it, and to be honest, Pierre, the first thing I thought was, more to read. I have so much to read, so much spiritual literature. I'm tired of receiving it. Finally, one night before I went to bed, I read the first sections of your book, the book you sent, The Gentle Art of Blessing. I can tell you that it changed my thought process. After reading it, I just started asking God to bless all these people, to bless them and their families, to bless them in their finances, their spiritual life, every aspect of their lives. Very slowly, very gently, the weight began to lift from my shoulders, not all at once, but gradually. And now, every morning, when I wake up, the first thing I do is to bless them. And in the middle of the day, and again before I go to sleep at night, there is no structure to this place. There is no routine to live by. Hour by hour, hour after hour, nothing happens. So I just do the first thing that comes to my mind, and lately, that has been to pray and to bless.
Wow, that is incredible. Before I go to the first caller, Pierre, I just, you know, something that sort of came up as I'm listening to you, and, you know, especially you sharing that, you know, it took sometimes 3 years to cultivate a truly authentic blessing. And, it, you know, it just seems to me that my heart agrees with everything that you said, but my ego is determined and likes to stand in the doorway at times. And it's as if, you know, whether it's a so-called self-perceived detractor, someone's wronged me, or even someone that I love, or that's in my day-to-day life, sometimes there's that instantaneous reaction of anger or resentment. And then, of course, you know, after a few moments go by, you step back, and then you perhaps even try to put yourself in the other person's shoes, or, you know, try to understand that they're perhaps suffering, or whatever the situation may be. I guess I'm trying to understand, how do you get to that point where you're recognizing that your blessing is truly authentic? Because I can sit and almost say like a mantra, I want to bless you, and there is a part of me that desire is very sincere, but for it to be fully authentic, to pop out of your heart, as Bhavi was saying, as you were saying, I guess, how do you cultivate that?
Well, again, I think perseverance is something very important. I say there are three qualities essential to the spiritual path, the spiritual life, is intent, sincerity, and perseverance. And Mother Teresa, you know, went through a spiritual desert of close to 50 years. And she never gave up serving. She just continued. So, blessing, I think, you will feel in your heart when it comes from the heart. But don't give up because you don't feel that straight away. I told you, it took me long, long time to bless with feeling rather than the head. But at the beginning, the sincerity of the desire to bless sincerely, was what carried me. And if you persevere, that sincerity will get down to the heart and you will bless from the heart. It's not possible otherwise. Sooner or later, you will get there.
Thank you. And I'm going to go to one of our first callers. And again, if you have a question for Pierre or reflection, please push *6.
Okay, I'm listening.
Thank you, Amit. Hi, all. I'm Devin. I'm calling from Orange, California. And Pierre and Pavi, I would say that this conversation is covering my heart with honey. It's just so, so relieving and healing and nurturing, I would say, just listening to it. I feel so blessed. Thank you. And I had a question, and probably I think part of it is answered in Amit's question, but I'll ask this question anyway, Pierre. Excuse me.
Yes.
When I'm feeling angry or frustrated with a person or a situation, where do I start for cultivating that feeling of blessing? And I think you answered it a little bit in Amit's question. So if you would add anything to that, otherwise...
I'd like to offer another aspect of this. When you feel an angry emotion or anything, any emotion that upsets you, just observe it. You are not your emotion. You are a child of the light. You are not your emotions. So just try to observe them as an outside observer and say, interesting. Your name is Deborah, is that it? What is your first name?
Devin. I'm Devin Pierre.
Devin. And look, that's interesting. Devin is feeling very upset about this person. You observe yourself, trying to know that you are not the upset part. You are the serene, divine reflection. Just try that, in addition to just persevering in wishing to bless.
Thank you. My emotions are not me. I'm the divine spirit. So I put myself in a mode of observer to monitor my emotions, and that the detachment would help me. Thank you so much. Thank you, Pierre.
You're welcome.
Pierre, we have, one of the comments that have come in online is individual Keith, who's listening from England, actually. And he asks, do you believe in the law of attraction? And if you do, how does that interpretation differ from the materialistic one that you usually find in books and workshops?
Well, the law of attraction for me is so very simple. Like attracts like. If you love someone, sooner or later, the love will come back to you. Maybe not through that person, but in some other manner. And I believe that our good thoughts always attract good to us. Although, we can't have a book of accounts, and draw up two columns. Here's a thought I sent out. Here's the thought that comes back to me, or the good that comes back to me. There's an element of faith, you know. I believe in love because I had once in my life an incredibly powerful mystical experience where I felt, not thought, I felt love as the ultimate strength, law, power, reality governing the whole universe. And my mind had completely disappeared. I was just in a state of consciousness where there was nothing but love. And for a while, the divine consciousness was my consciousness, because there is one infinite mind. So I believe that the ultimate law of attraction is love, and that the more love you put out, the more love will come back to you, although that is not an always a law. I used to know the prior of Thésée, this wonderful community in France that was started as a community of Protestant monks and became an international ecumenical center. And the prior, Frère Roger Schütz, Brother Roger Schütz, was an incredible, incredibly good, loving man who went all around the world preaching reconciliation. And he was assassinated, murdered in his own church during a church service by an insane woman. So the law of attraction doesn't function mechanically, but I do think that it always does function, and the good will always come back to you in some way or another, and it might be in another lifetime.
Thank you. And again, for those of you that are on the call, if you have a question for Pierre, you can push *6 and you'll be entered into the queue. I'm going to go to our next caller.
Yes, I am smiling and rejoicing to be able to hear this today. When Pavi was talking about her husband blessing someone who sneezed, I wanted to share something my grandchild said and asked if Pierre had anything to add. My grandchild asked me, Grandma, why do people say, bless you, when someone sneezes? And I had to ask her exactly what she was meaning, and I then realized she was saying plus for the word bless. And that has become our family saying, to say plus you. And it's become a way for me to think of, I'm plussing you with all that I can think of as good right now. Do you have anything to add to that, Pierre?
The only thing I can think of is what Jesus said, you know, that we have to become as little children if we want to enter the kingdom. I find that just beautiful. That's wonderful. And it's not the words we use that count, though. It's the intention of the heart. That is the core of blessing. Is the intention of the heart, not the words.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
This has been a beautiful talk, and I just been cherishing it deeply.
Thank you. It's been a joy talking to all of you, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. My greatest joy in life is communicating with people.
Thank you. Thank you for your beautiful question and share as well. You know, Pierre, I wanted to shift for a second. You know, you've brought up this friend, this inmate in Texas a few times here on the call, and I know that you and I briefly spoke about it. And it just seems that, you know, he's an individual that is such a big part of your life, and that, in fact, you come to the U.S., once a year just to visit him and spend time with him. And I just, you know, from someone that had took from your book to now someone that you even consider, you know, a spiritual guide in some ways. And so I was hoping you could just share a little bit about him and kind of what you've learned and from his transformation and how it's helped transform you as well.
Well, you know, he's taught me that, you know, how could I ever complain? I mean, he's been through such hardship, and he wrote to one of my friends, "If I have to die on death row, I will have at least shown that one can be happy there." You might have heard about the dark night of the soul. That is something that is frequently alluded to among spiritual seekers on all paths. And I went through a few years ago a dark night of the soul. It was so dark, I was at the rock bottom of a dark valley for almost 3 years, to the extent that for 2 years I could not even bless. It was so horrendous. And what kept me going was Roger's example. I wrote my second book on him during this period because the example of this man who's in pure hell and has discovered that forgiveness and gratitude are the ultimate answers to everything. And I'd like to add, I just published in French a little book on called Making Yourself the Gift of Forgiveness. That forgiveness is first of all a gift you make to yourself, just like blessing. It is, because to live with resentment is horrible. So forgiveness is the freedom from resentment. And again, I discovered a blessing through the path of forgiveness. So it has always been something very important for me. And Roger has learned to forgive completely a system that has held him in prison for 30 years when he is innocent. And that has happened in great part through the ability to bless his tormentors.
Beautiful. I'm going to go to one of our next callers.
Hi, this is Prita calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you so much for this just beautiful, beautiful conversation. Question I have is follows up on a question that Pavi had earlier about your shift from the external to the internal world and mode of operating. And I'm wondering now, when you deal with people in extremely materially poor environments or those that may have social barriers and blocks that they face every day, I'm struck by your comment that gratitude is the flip side of blessing. And I just wonder how you approach those situations and people in those environments. Do you encourage them to feel gratitude for the non-material assets they have, or how do you reconcile your earlier focus with the external ways of bringing about change and the internal?
Good question. I really appreciate it. Well, I would never tell a person who's in desperate plight what she should do. I don't feel the right to, you know. And I can help them if they are open to think differently. But it is their choice. I've been for 20 years a prison visitor in the Geneva prison here. And I remember one gentleman from Ghana who was in prison for drug traffic. And I lent him my book on the gentle art of blessing, and it just transformed his life completely. He started blessing the guards, the officers, the social people at the prison director. He started blessing the judge and the district attorney, his own lawyer. He just, and all the other inmates, of course. He just blessed and blessed and blessed and blessed. And he was completely transformed by this practice. And the time of his trial came, and he'd been blessing everybody involved abundantly. And usually for this kind of misdemeanor, he would have had 7 to 8 years of penitentiary. And when he was condemned to 1 year and a half, and as he'd done already over 1 year in the local prison before the judgment, he just had a few months left. When he came back, nobody in the prison wanted to believe him. They had to phone the tribunal to be sure that this has happened. So I didn't preach anything to him, but I just gave him a tool, and he decided to use it. I would never tell a poor person, do this or do that or start blessing, but I would bless them myself.
Thank you. That's really beautiful. Thank you for this amazing conversation.
You're so welcome. It's my total joy. I feel you all linked. You know, I feel this mentally. I feel this so strongly, this awakening network all around the world. It is so powerful. And that is what is going to change the world. It is our growing sense of oneness, of one mind, one consciousness, one love, uniting us all. Nothing can stop such a power.
Thank you, Pierre. And I, Preeta, thank you for such a great question. And to those of you that are on the call, if you do have a question for Pierre, we have time for one or two more questions. You just push *6 and you'll be entered into the queue. And while we wait, you know, I'm gonna turn it over to Bhavi. I think she has another question or two, but I think it would also be great too, Pierre, if you could, you hit on a very important topic of forgiveness. And it's so interesting how this idea of blessing and gratitude and forgiveness all just sort of seem to be interrelated, and how that's, and blessing someone, especially someone that may be a detractor, also has to do with this idea of forgiveness. But forgiveness of the self seems to be one of the most difficult challenges that we also would encounter. And I thought it would be great if you could share a little bit about that, and specifically some of your own experience, things that you've had to learn to forgive yourself and how you've overcome that.
When I went, through this deep night of the soul, what I call my tsunami, the ultimate thing I had to forgive was myself for mistakes I'd been through. I mean, I all my life just exploded in one moment. My fantastic marriage of 26 years just fell through, and I had the greatest health challenge of my whole life because my energy had dropped so low. My workshops just crumbled, hence my income crumbled, shriveled up, and finally my spiritual path of 40 years just blew into smithereens. So the five of them at the same time was really rather a lot. And his was, I was a sort of celebrated trainer and writer, well known regionally, and at the bottom of the pit. And I first had to not judge myself and then forgive myself. And it took a long time, but today I can really say I am grateful for having been through this incredible trial. When I was in it, I didn't see how I would ever come out of it. But I did, because I was sincere. Mary Baker Eddy, who's a American metaphysician of the last century, whom I respect, she once said, "A deep sincerity is sure of success, for God takes care of it." And the other thing was the perseverance. I knew I would never, 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 never give up. As I love the statement by Churchill, I lived in England, grew up in England during the last war, and Churchill told his countrymen, when you're going through hell, keep going. Well, I was going through hell for almost 3 years, and I just kept going. So, to come back, forgiving yourself is, I think, the most challenging of all the forms of forgiveness. But when you know that you are totally loved with no accusation from the divine love that people call God, that will help a lot. I love the parable of the prodigal son in the book of Luke. It is my favorite parable of Jesus' parables, because the younger son who's squandered all the family inheritance, all his inheritance, in wild parties with prostitutes and all that, and he comes home completely broke, expecting his father to scold him. And the father not only doesn't scold him, but embraces him and puts on the white robe of innocence and the ring of oneness on his life, on his finger. And you can do that to yourself. You have the right to clothe yourself with the robe of forgiveness, the white robe of total innocence. One of the most powerful mystical experiences I had in my whole lifetime was when I was coming down into Geneva, into the city in a tram. I have no car. I've lived my whole life without a car, and I'm still alive and doing well. And suddenly the whole tram was filled with light, and I saw the ontological, the essential innocence of everybody in that tram. I got off at the bus stop where I was supposed to descend, and it was the same thing. I was here on the pavement, and I could see with a deep spiritual seeing the utter innocence of every single person there. I felt like raising my hands and shouting, "You are innocent, you are innocent." But as I didn't want to be taken to the local lunatic asylum, so I kept my peace. But I felt that innocence, and it was one of the most powerful experiences of my whole lifetime. And I can say I even know that is true of President Assad of Syria. Behind the tormented, terrible mask of somebody destroying their own country, behind that tormented mask is an innocent child of divine love.
Thank you so much, Pierre, for the richness and the lived experience of all you're sharing today. Early on in the conversation, you mentioned becoming a defrocked sociologist in Africa. I feel like many of us on this call have become defrocked change makers in our own way, in the sense that we may have started in the world of social development and, you know, philanthropy and like making the world a better place using external levers as our starting point. And when the rubber hits the road, when you actually, you know, start to try and effect change in those ways, you realize very soon the limitations and the backfiring that happens. And I think what you've shared with us on this call is really, you know, it shifts the lens, and in a very powerful way, I think, gives us a pathway to walk as we are walking that dance, you know, because no life is purely internal or purely external. We're constantly shifting between those two, and yet when we carry some of the keys that you've, you know, spoken about today, I think we find different levers and we find different access points. We find a very different way of moving in the world. And I think, do you have, as a penultimate question, what we'd like to ask you is, what is it that we, as this community that's dispersed and all over the world and yet united in terms of the values that we honor and cherish, what can we do to serve your journey?
To serve whose journey?
To serve your journey, your work in the world, to honor it, what can we do in our own small ways?
Well, Amit at the beginning mentioned living in a service-oriented way. I think that is the ultimate core of the spiritual path. It's not to have nice mystical experiences high up on mountaintops. It's to live as a world servant. Hugh Scofield, who was a British thinker of the last century, coined the term and even created an organization called the Servant Nation. Now, we have lived in divided political nations for years, and we now need to create a new nation of world servants, people who are working for a world that works for all, a win-win world that works for all, which will be the world of tomorrow. That's absolutely certain, because the old conservative, masculine, hierarchical, Cartesian, competitive paradigm of yesterday is already dead. And we are creating this win-win world, this world that works for all. But it will only happen as each of us feels part of this servant nation. We already are this servant nation. We must just become aware of it. So, as I said, I would conclude, as I said at the beginning, everything is consciousness. Just become aware that you are a world servant just because you want a better world.
Lovely. That gives us a starting point for sure and a pathway to follow. My last question before we conclude
yes.
the call is this. After having heard all these stories, I think I can't help but ask this on behalf of all the listeners. May we have a blessing from you, Pierre? Short blessing for all those who are tuned in today and
absolutely.
Scattered to the winds.
From the very bottom of my whole heart, may you be enfolded in grace. May you treasure the infinite goodness that is the essence of whom you are. May the light of your divinity shine not only for those around you, but for who you are. And may your heart be covered with honey. Goodbye, precious listener friends all around the world. I love you. I send you all the very, very best, and I will keep you in thought and in blessings. Goodbye.
Wow. I don't even know how to react to that, just other than saying from the depths of all of our hearts, thank you so much, Pierre. Such a beautiful way to end our call. We usually end with a moment of silence in gratitude, and it just seems like that prayer in itself was really a culmination of holding gratitude. And so thank you for everything that you've shared, and Bhavi, thank you for your masterful moderation. It's just been such a great, great call, and thank you to all of you that have dialed in or that are just listening in from different parts of the world to just even hold this space for things like this. And so, Pierre, the one last thing that we do before we all jump off the call is we take everyone off of mute so that we can all just say thank you to you. And so on the count of three, if we can just all say a big, big thank you and heart for and even just send love and hugs and blessings to Pierre, that would be wonderful. So one,
I hope so, you tell me my heart is covered with honey.
It is. Thank you. And ours is as well. And we'll be sure to send out your beautiful website and information so that way if people want to may be in touch, they can. And thank you all again for joining
our call. Website, I just wanted to mention that we'll have a new question and answer section, which is just being created on the website.
Wonderful. Yes. Thank you all. And have a wonderful week ahead of you. And we'll be in touch soon. And hopefully you can join us all next week for our call next Saturday. Thank you.